been in a war yet, but this boy's got utter belief in himself.
And somehow, she's found the acceleration.
Hello, letsrun.com supporters club members. Welcome to the Friday 15. We love you. Thanks for being part of our club. We've had a lot of world records in the last few weeks in the world of distance running, but this weekend in Staten Island, New York, it is time to hand out some championships. The USA Indoor Championships will be held on Saturday and Sunday. Letsrun.com will have boots on the ground, two sets of boots, in fact. Both myself, Jonathan Gold, and Robert Johnson will be there. And that's important for a couple reasons. One, there are some pretty great races on tap. Some of the stars are skipping out, but Hobbs Kessler will be there. Quincy Wilson will be there. The women's distance events are loaded. We've got Nikki Hiltz, Shelby Houlihan, Whitney Morgan, who's in great form, Heather McLean, Sinclair Johnson. Lot of great action.
Caitlin Toohey.
I mean, I guess if you want to throw her in there, Robert, though, I'm not sure she'll be in contention the way her 2025 season has gone so far. It's going to be a fantastic meet, and it's going to be important, more important than ever, I would say, to go to letsrun.com, because as we record this on Friday morning, barely 24 hours out from the meet, USATF has not announced any broadcast plans for the Saturday portion of the meet, which includes both 3,000 meter finals, all of the prelims, pretty much. So, unless we get some last minute deal, which could happen, you might have to rely on our written coverage to find out what happened at this meet, or just stare at the results page and refresh it. So, good thing we're going down there. Very excited to be making the trip. It'll be my first trip to Ocean Breeze, and we're going to preview that meet. We'll also talk a little bit about Salomon Barrega's marathon debut, which is on Sunday in Seville. He is the 2021 Olympic 10,000 meter champion. Plenty to discuss. This is Jonathan Gault. I'm joined by Robin and Weldon Johnson, co-founders of letsrun.com. Weldon has gotten up early. It's 6:15 a.m. on the West Coast. He's bleary-eyed, but he appears to have his coffee and he's going to give it a go. So good to see you guys this morning.
Top of the day, John. About to head out this weekend for our first family trip in California. Heading down to Carmel for the weekend. My wife took a couple days off from work. Yesterday we went hiking in Marin. The running is coming back. Oh my God. There's people said, Ouija, have you been running in Marin? I think I did like 20 years ago, and I'm going to start again. My God, this place we went hiking, it would be some good running over there.
Sounds lovely. Carmel, isn't that where Pebble Beach is? You playing some golf, Weldon?
Despite my wife's lucrative job, John, I'm not going to go out there and drop. I'm not sure what it is to play at Pebble, considering I haven't played golf in probably a year. You know, when you're on vacation with a 4-year-old and 1.5-year-old, it's I'm not sure there's time for daddy to go play golf.
You don't have 4.5 hours to go play golf. All right, Robert, I know what your plans are. You're going to be at USA Indoors. What are you most excited for this weekend? Apart from seeing me, of course.
First of all, any of you that work at a big company, it's far from surprising that upper management is conveniently taking a weekend family vacation when the lower ranks of the staff will be working all weekend. Nothing to see here. I'm pumped because I read your preview last night, John. You did an excellent job. And to be honest, like, it annoys the hell out of me that people skip World Indoors.
No.
Yes. But I'll confess, normally I'm like, dude, I got to go to USA Indoors. Like, I was not excited about going to USA Indoors. I'm so much more excited for NCAAs because, you know, everybody's like all in on that meet and to win it. And I was like, oh man, these pros are skipping this thing. It pisses me off. And then I read your preview and I'm like, well, all the women are there pretty much. So I was very excited about that. The women's, to see Shelby return, the controversy, whatever, which way you're on her is going to be exciting. So The women's 1500 and 3000 finals are amazing. But I think that watching Hobbs Kessler try to contend, can he do the double? Hell, he's never even won one before. I think that's interesting. I do think it's going to be a good meet. Grant Holloway is always there. So lots to look forward to. Instead of getting ready for the podcast, though, I was just posting on the world-famous message board. Supporters Club member has started a thread. Peach Pit. He wanted to know, why are people more surprised that Hoey went from 147 to 143 last year, which he claims... Oh, excuse me. Why do people think it's more surprising that Josh Hoey went from 147 to 143 from age 18 to age 24, when in reality it happened between 23 and 24, when Donovan Brazier did the same thing at age 18 and 19? And I think he's serious about this post. And
do you want to take this one, Robert, or should I? Because I feel like we can both answer this. I mean, Donovan Brazier...
Cool. I'll just read my response. I said, yes, 143 to 141 was surprising for Hoppe last year, but it's far from crazier than from 147 to 143 for Hoey. Remember the following. One, Hoppe was fourth in the world in 2019. He was also fourth in the world in 2024. So one could argue nothing really changed. Two, Hoppe moved to altitude for the first time last year, and he went from 143 to 141, he also got a great new training partner in Hobbs Kessler. I can't believe you're really arguing that huge improvement from prodigies at age 18 to 19 is more suspicious than a huge improvement from a former prodigy at age 24, which would be Hoey. Hoey looked like a lot of former mid-D prodigies who peaked as a teen, albeit more, and never was going to improve, and now he may be the number one in the world. But can we as a board please agree to focus on the more important and pressing doping-related questions? How in the world does someone with my genetics, Wejo, go from 29-49 to 28-27 at age 26, actually almost age 27, and then on to 28-06 at age 29? We are approaching the 25-year anniversary of that improvement, and the statute of limitations to question that validity expires at 25 years, I believe. So I threw a grenade at Wejo.
I'm being accused of doping by my own brother? What if I had been doping and Robert didn't know? I just announced it right now.
We'd have to change our coverage plans for USA's. This would be the most scandalous episode in the history of the website.
I did not dope. People were talking about bicarb. I wonder if I tried to take bicarb. I would... In college, I remember people like, oh, yeah, this. Like, in high school, I remember people said to take ginseng. Like, I was a mediocre high school runner. Wasn't really recruited for college. Then once I was a so-called pro, for me, it really took off. I went to Flagstaff, started doing altitude. I was all in. Mentally, it had to work that year. Like, there was no going back. There was no plan B. So for Hoey last year, I wonder if his Adidas contract was coming due. He switched coaches, and you know, in the past, I think his dad meddled a lot with him. Maybe he still did, but maybe Hoey's like, it has to work this year. I mean, it didn't work for his brother, but there's just lots of reasons like something can click for somebody. Saying, oh, it's drugs is such a just cheap way out. But then with this whole bicarb thing, I was wondering, it's like, I don't think I tried bicarb. But I used to like drive to my car. Does anyone still do this? Is anyone in Flagstaff? How many pros we got in Flagstaff? We got 100 pros in Flagstaff right now, probably. Did anyone drive up to the ski resort, sleep in the back of their car? I would do that for a couple days before big races. I dotted my I's and crossed the T's, people. But that was probably all like placebo effect. It made me, I was like, yes, I'm ready to go. Like, it's like probably like the bicarb may help, but also mentally you're just like 100% invested then.
Right. But Grant Fisher said that after his 5K world record. He said, yes, I use bicarb. He's like, maybe if it helps 1%, that would be huge. More likely, it's just 0.1%, but I still feel like it's helping me. And he's like, that mental edge, I think it's benefiting me just because I believe I'm maxing out everything. So that's why he took it, and I assume he's going to keep taking it. As for your sleeping in the back of the car thing, Weldon, I've heard this story a few times, and it's just struck me, like, I would think that sleeping in a slightly lower of elevation, but in an actual bed where you can get like quality sleep and not being in a strange body position, probably outweighs any gains you're getting from an extra 2,000 feet or so. So I'm still kind of, but mentally, like you said, it probably helped because you're like, I'm as prepared as I could be, but I don't know if I could recommend that to anyone who's in Flagstaff right now.
And it'd probably function better on this podcast if I didn't wake up with a five something on the clock to record it. But the men have gotten center billing this indoor season in the U.S., and it's time for the ladies to step up. I think that's what USATF is, apart from Hobbs Kessler and Josh Hoey. But like the 3K, Shelby Houlihan taking on the best in the USA, what does she have? I think that is the main storyline for Let's Run fans. I'm excited for that.
The 1500 on the women's side, which is Sunday, and like you said, well, in the 3K, which is Saturday, on the women's side, I think those are the two races I'm most excited for. I am very excited for the men's 400 as well, because Quincy Wilson's electric, and I mean, he might not even make the final. This is a strong men's 400 field as well. But looking at the women's events, we are missing Elise Cranny, and there's no Carissa Schweizer, but most of the other top talents are there. You've got
Alicia Monson's not there.
Alicia Monson, right, still working her way back from injury. But you've got some very good women who were either at the Olympics or have been running very well in 2025. Houlihan, huge question for her, because she's run pretty quick times, 8:31 in the 3K, 4:20 in the mile, but she hasn't been tested sort of head-to-head with some of these top Americans. We haven't seen her in a championship race for 5 years, so how does she do? Because she used to own this meet. Like, from 2017 through 2020, she doubled in the 1500 3K every year, and she won all of those races at USA Indoors except for the mile in 2019. So she won 7 of the 8. But she's up against Nikki Hiltz, who has run well this year. And Hiltz is double entered in the 1500 and 5 and the 3K. She's up against Whitney Morgan, who was the Olympian last year and has had a lot of injuries in her career, but now she's been healthy for about a year, and she has had a terrific 2025 season. At Millrose, she ran 8:28 in the 3K, closed in 28:9. Just monster last lap. Like, that's how you win U.S. titles. She destroyed Jose Andrews on the last race, on the last lap, and Andrews ran pretty well there as well. You've also got Emily Mackay, who's a 355 1500 woman, world indoor medalist. She's in the 3K. And then in the 1500, Heather McLean, who actually beat Nikki Hiltz at Millrose in the mile, was second right behind Georgia Bell, former U.S. indoor champ. You've got Sinclair Johnson, former U.S. outdoor champ. You've got Danny Jones, who's running pretty well this year. She's in her first year with very nice track club. It's you know, a lot of talent in these events, and it's going to be fascinating to see Houlihan versus Hiltz, Hiltz versus McLean, Houlihan, McLean, like all of these women battling it out is going to be a lot of fun. So do you guys have any takes? Like, who do you expect? Who do you view as the favorite in these races, Robert?
Well, let's start with the 3000. That's first.
Okay.
Let me ask you a few factual questions. I was impressed by your preview, but now I've pulled up the 2025 USA indoor 3000 meter list. Is Josette Andrews in the meet?
No.
Shameful. Shameful. I mean, seriously. Like, really? Josette Andrews? You're too good to go to USA Indoors? If you've never won a medal and you're skipping, even a world indoor medal, and you're skipping USA Indoors, your pro card should be stripped. Cooper Tier, people like this, it's just disgusting to me. Elise Cranny's not there as well.
Correct.
So we do have two of the three that aren't there. And then I just thought of another name that's not there. Sorry to go negative, because I'm excited about going to this meet. We have a lot of names, but there's a lot more women, aren't there? Parker Valby?
Nope.
What is she doing?
She ran one indoor race, Robert, because New Balance wanted to run their meet. That's what she did, right, John? That's it.
Right. I mean, now, I will say this. Valby's much more of a 5K, 10K woman than 3K. I think it would be good for her if she makes a team in the 3K. That's a huge confidence boost. I don't think she's able to kick with these women right now, but... Yeah, I'd like to, obviously the meet would be better if she's at USA Indoors. No argument. I mean,
does
there.
She need a 10K qualifier? Maybe.
Yes. So she is running the 10 at the end of March, and I imagine she's kind of locked in for training for that.
I just don't see how running this race would hurt you. And this is the problem with these goddamn standards. Just give America three spots.
Well, okay. I actually want to ask you this point, Robert, because in my preview, you added this line about anyone who runs USA in world indoors should be like qualified for World Outdoors. What did you mean by that? Because I don't agree with just showing up and running at World Indoors. That should count as having the standard. Like, can you expand on that? You're trying to, trying to incentivize participation at World Indoors for our listeners, to be clear here.
Correct. I'm trying to encourage and participation in meets that matter. So I think there should be we all agree, the three of us agree, that there should be a blackout window that, like, Cooper Tier should not be allowed to qualify for World Outdoors during the week of the U.S. Indoor Championships, unless he's at the U.S. Indoor Championships. So we all think there should be, like, if he wanted to run a 5,000 at BU and skip USAs, he should have run that last weekend. It should not be this weekend. That's number one. And then number two, I just said, like, look, the chasing of these standards, like, I get it, they have limited fields. But for a country like the U.S., when we're going to send three anyways, it's just stupid. And I'm like, they should reward someone for going to USA for World Indoors. If you can make a smaller field, if someone like Cooper Tier could qualify for U.S. for World Indoors, he should be granted the 5,000 standard for World Outdoors. How hard is that to understand?
Well, I don't buy that because sometimes, I mean, I guess you're assuming you're going to have these super competitive fields, but that's just not always the case. And maybe they become more competitive if you give them that carrot, but I'd be more comfortable with saying, like, you get top eight at World Indoors and that counts as the standard. I don't want to just say, oh, you made the roster because people from your country didn't show up and that counts as having the standard.
It doesn't matter to me. Like, again, if the country's going to send three, just let them pick whatever three they want. It's stupid that an individual has to have the standard. The country should get the standard, not the individual. But anyways, back to this 3,000. It's interesting to me because Whitney Morgan's run 1448. She's the U.S. leader at 828. But, you know, she historically has not been great on the track, right? She was never even top five, I think you said, NCAA track championships.
Right, and I wonder how much of that had to do with just injuries versus her better events actually, you know, 5K or cross country, because she was an NCAA champion cross country. But I just look at that performance at Millrose. I was impressed when Nikki Hiltz ran 8:32 at BU and closed in 29.6, and then you've got Morgan running faster at Millrose and closing faster, 28.9 in a 8:28 race. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Hiltz beats Morgan, but I look at that, I'm like, that's the most impressive performance I've seen by a US 3K woman, and that's why I picked Morgan for the win.
I think that you got it wrong. I don't think she's going to win. I think she could win. She is a 402 1500 meter runner, but I generally think in tactical 3000, I mean, it's the Jakob Ingebrigtsen thing. What do we see in the 5000? If you have the endurance to hang there and you're actually a 1500 meter runner, you're going to win. So I would edge to in a tactical 3000, you know, the women are better or just hammering the pace. I would give the edge to a 1500 meter runner, which would be Houlihan or Hiltz. Now I'm extremely unconfident in the fact that Shelby Houlihan is coached by her sister. Like, I think her sister's track record of coaching is abysmal. It's terrible. This is a woman that couldn't get Georgia Bell to even the Pac-12 final when she was coaching her in college. So that makes me concerned for Houlihan. Hiltz has not impressed me this indoor season. I normally just trust her kick, but she was outkicked at Millrose in the mile. I guess she did run an 8:32 3,000. She's 8:32 this year. Houlihan's 8:31. I think it's going to be a great between those three. Now, considering that, I forgot which one of those women's not going to go to Worlds, right? So even
Hiltz, Houlihan said they will not run World Indoors.
So, you know, I think Houlihan's going to end up on the team. I think she's going to be second or third and make it. I mean, she could win it, but I think Houlihan or Hiltz is the pick for the win here.
So you trust Houlihan's kick, having not seen it in 5 years, over what we just saw from Whitney Morgan at Millrose 2 weeks ago?
I probably shouldn't. You're right. But I don't know. 8:31 totally by yourself. But 1448 is pretty good. That's what makes it great. We have a real race with three stars in USA track and field. And I don't need 10. So to me, this is a great race. It's like a diamond league. You just need enough people to make it interesting. And
sounds like you need more than three from when you were listing off the names about 5 minutes ago. But
because when I read your preview, you didn't even mention Volpe. So it's fine. It's just like, I'm just like, okay, like, it's just, I feel like it is hard to get to China. And to be honest, I normally go to World Indoors. I'm not going to China, but I don't know. I just had enough.
All right, Weldon, any takes on the 3K, and what about the 15?
But we have a poll up on Let's Run. Who's going to win the women's 3,000? Have y'all looked at the results? Do not, if you have, do not reveal them.
I haven't seen the results.
Not seen them.
What?
Tell us the results. We haven't seen them.
59% are picking Shelby Houlihan. 32% for Whitney Morgan, and only 7% for Nikki Hiltz. 3% Emily McKay.
Only 7% are picking Hiltz? I feel like I would give Hiltz a better shot than Houlihan. Houlihan, 59%. That maybe it's just name recognition or something. That's kind of crazy.
I was a little disappointed. I'm going to have to add this poll. You did not add a women's 1500 meter poll. I'd like to see the results of that. Yeah, I think that's too high for Houlihan, but people still remember her dominating. By the way, maybe I should refer to her as convicted doper, Shelby Houlihan. I know that makes some people happy. She does. There was an interesting feature on her in the Wall Street Journal, which people are discussing on the message board. But it got me to thinking, and she admitted, she's in the interview, I thought it was good. Was it Rachel Bachman who wrote the article? I thought that the article did a good job of sort of summarizing the pros and cons against Shelby Houlihan in terms of the doping front. And for the record, we just want to let everyone know. People think, hey, Jonathan Galt has said he thinks she's innocent, etc. You guys, need to go hard on her. We have reached out to Shelby. We've asked her to appear on the podcast, and she's agreed to appear on the podcast after USA. So we're going to ask her the questions at some point. Everyone wants her to ask her. But, Rachel Bachman wrote that, basically in the article, Shelby admitted that, like, she understands why people think that the awful excuse was crazy, but they only had a week to come up with something, and she ate at a food court that had awful, even though she didn't order it. But Rachel Bachman says the concentration of mandrolone found in Houlihan's urine was 2 to 3 times higher than the highest values reported in the scientific literature after the consumption of much larger quantities of such meat, this court of arbitration for sport found. So, and they said that the probability of Houlihan's explanation is very close to zero. And Houlihan understands that the breeder defense, how it came off, it sounds kind of ridiculous. So I thought it was a good article. So I just want to let people know we will be talking to her. I don't know how many doping questions we're going to ask her this weekend, but should we just wait, or do we have to ask something so people don't rip me for you being a soft on her?
You can ask whatever you want, Robert, but I think you're going to get better, more considered answers when you actually have them in a podcast setting as opposed to like right after she's run a 3,000 meter race. So that would be my take on all of that. Well, then, I will try to introduce you to this segment for the third time. Do you have any takes on these races?
I'm just excited. But this is a big test, I think, for two people the most, Whitney Morgan and Shelby. Now, Whitney did make the Olympics last year, and I was like, oh, wow, she won Milrose. She made the Olympics. She's at NCAA cross country. She's not getting the credit she deserves on the track. She made the Olympics last year. She got smoked by everybody else. And then I think she was like fifth in the 5K.
She was fifth. I'm surprised that Robert didn't bring that up, because when Abby D'Agostino, now Abby Cooper, Dartmouth legend, made the 2016 Olympic team, every time that was brought up on this podcast, he prefaced it by the fact that she was only fifth at the trials in 2016. Whitney Morgan makes the Olympic team by finishing fifth. He doesn't say a peep. So maybe there's just an anti-Dartmouth bias, but continue, Weldon.
I wonder if people had known, because Ellie St. Pierre only ran the 15, right?
Correct. And Valby ran the 10K.
And Valby as well. I wonder if people could have like game theoried that out and shot for fifth place instead, because Valby was the fourth at 14:51. Morgan was fifth at 15:05, and Ali Bukowski was sixth, 7 seconds behind. I mean, third place was...
She was 14 seconds out of fourth?
Yeah, and 20 seconds out of third.
Well, she made the Olympic team recently.
Yeah, but the Milrose win was big. But then I look up, I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. Melrose, 8:28. What's she done before? 2 years ago, she ran 8:30 at Melrose and got second. So I've never seen Whitney Morgan win anything of consequence on the track. She can, I don't care if it's a returning from doping Shelby Houlihan. Nikki's better at the 1500. What are the poll results again? Emily McKay, like, I don't expect her to win. So there's, I think this one is wide open. The 3K is wide open. It's there for the taking. I wouldn't be shocked if, I don't think McKay will win it. That's probably the least likely of the pick, but of the others, it's a big, whoever steps up and wins it, it's a huge win. And it kicks off the weekend, right? If you're Hiltz or Houlihan coming back.
The more I think about it, I can give him the edge to Houlihan over Hiltz, despite the coaching, because Houlihan is a 5,000 runner. I mean, she's got the 5,000 strength. Hiltz has got a great kick, but she's more pure 1,500. So I think that Houlihan has a little bit more strength. And then she's got a better 1,500 meter PB. But it's going to be interesting. Barely.
I mean, Hiltz ran that PB last year. Shelby's is from October 2019. But yeah, that's going to be fun. The 1500, I also think I picked Heather McLean actually to win this 1500. And maybe this is my Massachusetts bias showing through, but she beat Nikki Hiltz at Millrose. It was a close race. I think Hiltz, I mean, essentially, I think Heather McLean ran a better tactical race than Nikki Hiltz in the Wanamaker Mile. It was a little slower. And that counts for something because guess what? The final's probably going to be tactical in Staten Island as well. And I also recall 2 years ago, Heather McLean won this race in an upset over Ellie St. Pierre. She has had some injuries the last couple of years, but Heather McLean's a really good runner when she's healthy. And I think she's got a couple good results this year. She won the New Balance Indoor Grand Prix Mile. I just like her chances in a championship race. So that's why I picked McLean. And she's fresh, whereas Hiltz and Houlihan, which are two of her top competitors, are going to be doubling back from the 1500, sorry, from the 3K. So that was my logic for Heather McLean. Do you buy it, Robert, or is it going to be Hiltz or Houlihan or Sinclair Johnson?
It's not going to be Sinclair Johnson. I thought it was good rationale, but in my brain, I just think of Hiltz and Houlihan as being better than Heather McLean.
I mean, historically, yes. They are more accomplished. They've run faster.
No, there's a lot of questions about Houlihan at this level 4 years later, whether she's going to take down Nikki Hiltz and stuff. So if Houlihan somehow comes into this thing and takes down both these races, oh my God, the message boards are going to be going nuts, right?
Well, that's what used to see. She'd show up to this meet and she'd crush everyone because her kick was way better in the 15 and 3K. And we've seen her do it before. The question is, can she now do it at age 32 when she's been 4 years removed from racing? I don't think so, but I'm also not ruling it out because she was that good in her prime.
If I had to think about it, I think I like her chances better in the 3K to win. I mean, Hiltz and McLean are essentially, they're pretty close to Nikki's level before the ban. Whereas in the 3K, Shelby's best 3K is better than their best 3Ks ever by a lot, or where they are now. Like, Shelby doesn't need to be as close back to her previous form at 3K to, I think, win this race. In 1500, she's got to be pretty close. And I think the speed event's going to be the harder event to be there. I mean, she's older.
Yeah, I buy that logic. What about the men's side? Hobbs Kessler is going for the double, 1500, 3K. 3K is first. The field is not that great. There is no Cole Hawker, there's no Yared Nuguse. There is a guy by the name of Dylan Jacobs, though, who just ran 7:30 at the Millrose Games in his first race for the On Athletics Club. He was fifth at the Olympic Trials in the 5K quietly last year. Olin Hacker made the team last year and actually ran pretty well. He was fifth at World Indoors. Morgan Bielskum's run pretty well in the past, but I would say the biggest obstacle to Kessler is Dylan Jacobs, who is clearly quite fit right now. I just trust that a 329 guy who is fifth in the Olympic final is going to outkick him. Which maybe I should use the same logic for Nicky Hiltz, who's a 355 runner and was seventh in the Olympic final. But yeah, I picked Kessler here in the 3K.
This is interesting to me. There was a post on the message board and someone's like, well, Kessler's a 140. Is he a 143 or is it 144, John?
143.
You know, he's not an 8.5 guy. He's not a 15.5 guy. Like his range, like he was disappointing that 3000. He thought he should run 727 or 8 and he didn't come close to that. I mean, like 735 or something. And someone's like, yeah, cause he's a 143 guy. Like he's not strong enough, you know, to run a great 5000. Although he had a good 2 mile in high school. And I started thinking about that. And I was like, okay, if this is a rabid race, I think I'm going with Jacobs.
Yeah.
Although that 346 mile is impressive. But I'm like, maybe that's just a bad race. Maybe he's more confident. But it's not a rabid race. I don't think it's going to be pushed from the gun. So I think Kessler is the pick here. But I'm not ruling out Jacobs. And if you had the other – on guy. If you had the Stanford guy in here.
Kai Robinson?
Yeah. If you had Kai Robinson here, I'm picking him to wipe the floor of Kessler.
I forgot that Kai Robinson's one of your guys. You seeing him do the double at NCAAs in Austin, the 5K, 10K, I think that forever made Kai Robinson one of Rojo's guys.
By the way, I've been doing a little research while doing the podcast. First of all, Parker Volpe does not need the standard. She's 16th on the road to Tokyo list. And the standard is 30-20. Do we really expect her to hit 30-20? No, we don't.
What? Maybe. Training at altitude, professional group, 1 year.
She might, but she doesn't need it. She's got a 30-59 from, she's got two 30-50s from, because it started in February of last year for the 10,000. So she's got two 30-50s in, on her clock there. So she's going to be eligible to go to the Olympics and the Worlds in the 10,000.
Hey, I'm picking Dylan Jacobs over Kessler. When I hear Kessler doing the double, I was like, oh, that's good. I'm glad he's doubling again. I'm thinking 8:15. What's he done in 3K? He ran horribly earlier this year.
Hold on. Horrible? He ran 7:35, which isn't that slow, to be honest. And he called it a bad race. He's like, I thought I was much fitter. So that to me is like, well, okay, he thought he had a bad race and he ran 3:46, which is great the next week. Maybe he really did have a bad race, and I expect him to run better next time in the 3K.
Actually, I think previously in this podcast, I said, oh, it really wasn't that bad of a race. He just wasn't used to the pace tied up the last lap. It essentially was a 7:30 race. I mean, Dylan's going to be trying to wonder, how can I outkick him? But I think changing gears for Hobbs Kessler at the end of a 3K is something he's never done before. He's not going to know how to do that very well. This is a great opportunity for Dylan Jacobs. I mean, granted, he's won an NCAA 10K title, but that 7:30 first time out the bat was very impressive. He's now with the new group. So if he can pick up a USA title, even if it's indoors, I think that would be impressive. If Hobbs walks out of here with, I expect him to win the 1500. He walks out of here with double 1500 and 3K wins, that would be great. But wait a second, guys. You guys haven't gone there. Robert was like praising Hobbs Kessler yesterday. He even got quote of the day. And we had some long quote of the day. The long quotes of the day should be shorter. It should have just been the second part. He told David Monty, I think we should be focused on his titles, big meets, and not running fast at BU. It is what it is. So, of course, we all support that.
Well, then you got to play this up a little bit. There are two very prominent Americans who are running at BU on, actually later tonight, I'll be there. Cole Hawker and Coop Atiyah are not running USA Indoor Championships. They're running at BU. I mean, this is essentially Kessler taking a shot at them saying you should be running USA Indoors. And we've all said we kind of agree with that logic. At the same time, he goes on to be asked by David Monty, you know, well, are you going to run World Indoors if you make the team? And Hobbs says no. And his explanation was, not this year because it's late and it's so far. It would be too expensive time and training wise. And I just don't look, there's no getting around Nanjing. It's not easy to get there from Ann Arbor or Flagstaff. It's you're going to miss some training time or whatever, but you're also going to get in some big races. And the lateness on the calendar, okay, yes, technically it is 3 weeks later than last year if you go just by like March 20th versus March 1st. But compared to Worlds, it's actually earlier. Like the idea that you can't run World Indoors and then recover for USAs and Worlds, I don't buy that at all, because last year World Indoors was 16 weeks before the trials, 22 weeks before the Olympics. This year it's 19 weeks before the trials and 25 weeks before the Olympics. So I think it's very possible to do both. Especially because Chesler's not doing Grand Slam track.
Well, I'm assuming he's hoping to get invited as a racer to Grand Slam
track. As a challenger. That's possible. Yeah, that's true.
When I first saw the word expensive, I'm like, these guys have to foot their bill now to World Indoors? Like, Adidas will pay for that. But he said expensive, you know, time and training wise. Fine, I get it. But hell, with USATF's financial situation, soon the athletes are going to be paying their own way to World Indoors. And also, it's crazy. We're going to have the cracked supporters club members, those of you guys sharing your passwords, we're going to have the Netflix crackdown soon, because for John to get to China, he has to like go to New York on like subsequent weekends or something to get some visa. You can't just go once and show up. Like, he's in New York this weekend. No, he has to like go multiple times. This is like, don't people want to encourage you to come to their country and make it easier? Like,
I think the athletes, this is crazy. I don't think they have to deal with the consulate and stuff drama. I actually did get an email yesterday from the local organizing committee. They're like, oh, just send us the stuff and we'll make it easy to get you the visa. I'm like, oh, really? Do I not have to go to the consulate? And they're like, oh, no, if you already did that, yeah, you should still go. I'm just like, oh, whatever. But yes.
Wait, they would have done it for you, John, or not?
No, I don't think so. I think they were just trying to make sure that people who were behind on the process got it going.
I loved it because, well, then the Chinese organizers, they needed a note from yours truly. You know, it's a very hierarchical society in China. And they wanted a note from Mr. John's boss, Mr. Johnson, saying that John would be covering the meet diligently for Let's Run and where he would be staying. His responsibilities will include conducting interviews with top athletes and publishing articles each day at the competition. Mr. Galt also plans to write event reports about specific races, including the men's 60 meters and 1500 meter races. He's a proud supporter of the Communist Party, the Democratic Party of the United States of America. No, I did not put that part in there.
Okay.
Like John, you assume they're monitoring your shit when you're over there, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I assume pretty much everyone has access to my phone at this point. So I don't know. Yeah.
Actually, they're monitoring right now. Hello, Supporters Club Chinese members. They get DeepSeek is listening right now.
Should we just mail it in this podcast? Apparently you now can just like put in articles into LLMs and then they'll just make a podcast for you.
Mail it in. People are paying to listen to this podcast, Robert. I would never.
But 1 week we should just put John's preview in there and then have these fake voices discuss it and see what if people realize it.
Well, I think they'd notice. I don't think we're that far along.
I hope so.
Oh, you guys haven't seen that thing? The Google thing? It's good, man. It'll summarize thing and they have a conversation. It's pretty good.
Okay. Should we talk about the fact that we don't know if anyone's going to actually be able to watch this thing on Saturday? This strikes me as a fairly important topic. I'm kind of surprised Robert isn't more outraged. Do you have a rant in you, Robert? Or are you thinking, oh, this is good for Let's Run because it'll force everyone to come to our website?
Well, it is great if no meets are broadcast. Then people will have to come to Let's Run to read our coverage. Only we get rid of live timing results as well. That would be even better. No, John thinks if the meet's not broadcast, sporting events isn't broadcast on the internet, it doesn't exist. I kind of think there's an overkill. Like, do you need to spend 10 grand on...
Robert, every single sporting event in the world these days is broadcast somewhere. Come on. This is just minor league stuff if this isn't on somehow. If there's some contractual dispute, if Runner Space, their contract ended and they're trying to get them to bid more, somehow USATF on its own should somehow figure out how to get this thing broadcast.
Well, no, I'll tell you what's happening here is Run a Space, it used to, that was just the default. They would broadcast the stuff that's not on the TV window on NBC Peacock. And pretty much all of the events on Sunday fall within the TV window, which is 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern. But there are finals and prelims on Saturday as well. And usually it would just be on USATF.tv. And at the end of 2024, USATF and Run a Space, they ended their agreement. And they had, what? We're now towards the end of February. They've had a month and a half or so, USATF, to kind of figure out a plan on how to broadcast this thing, who's going to be broadcasting it, where it's going to show up. And they still haven't announced anything. And I think that's also because USATF has lost a number of key staffers in the last couple of years. Adam Schmenk, who was the chief content officer and the longest tenured USATF employee, actually, he left the company voluntarily at the end of 2024. He would be the guy that would smooth this stuff over or take care of it. He's not there. And whoever's replaced him maybe doesn't have the contacts in the industry or just hasn't gotten around to it. They haven't handled it.
Come on. Stop the excuses. Look, this isn't that hard. We're overcomplicating this. USATF is in serious financial trouble. They lost $4 or $5 million. They pay Max Siegel way too much. Their big Nike deal was not indexed for inflation. I mean, it's a serious problem. They've laid off 4 or 5 of their highest paid employees. They're trying to save money. And they're incompetently run. Like, how hard is that? We know that. Everybody knows that. The Washington Post ran an expose on private jet travel and stuff like that. I was told there was an FBI investigation of USATF, but I was told by someone that the Justice Department said, we don't want anything that makes LA 2028 look bad. So why are we shocked by this? This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't love track and field. And like, it took me, John, do you guys remember during COVID, there was an American record attempt in the 5,000, two of them at Virginia Beach. In the span of 2 weeks, I taught myself how to live stream a broadcast. I couldn't do it now. I'm like, how did I learn how to do that? I had like remote cameras and wireless cameras and hired a pit crew and did it. Maybe it wasn't the same standard of a broadcast, but it worked damn well. How hard is it to figure that out if you want to put it up on YouTube?
No,
the fact that they didn't even announce this 2 days before the race is disgraceful.
What I will say is, my understanding is there is a broadcast crew in place that will be calling the action on Saturday. The issue is figuring it out. And there's going to be Carr Hughes, which is the production company that usually handles the NBC broadcasts. I believe they'll also be handling this Saturday events. The question is, where will it be streamed and will it be available live or is it after the fact? That's the question that's outstanding at the moment.
The simple solution to all of this was to try to get people to be fans of USA Track and Field. Support America. If we watch this Four Nations Cup, everybody in America is patriotic now. And support, are you a track fan? Are you a runner? You know, we'll give you a free pair of shoes and you'll get access to all the USA broadcast and we'll broadcast all the meets. And they should have been the hub. The nonprofit should have been the hub for broadcasting these meets instead of these flow tracks and runner spaces sort of extracting profits from parents that are desperate to watch their children race. But we didn't do any, they didn't do any of that. And, you know, you sign up for USATF at your membership, you get a t-shirt or a shoe. Some of the money goes to the support the Olympians and you get access to these meets. And broadcast it on YouTube. Broadcast it. We'll put it on our YouTube feed. We'll put it on Sidious Mag YouTube feed. It's not that hard.
You think that this stuff is free? It's not free to produce a broadcast or to pay the talent or to get all the infrastructure for broadcasting a meet. The reason why FlowTrack and Runner Space charge money to watch all the meets they put on is because that stuff costs money. And if you're saying take it away from them and give it to USATF, they're going to have to start fronting more of the costs. That's not going to help that financial situation.
Include it for the USATF membership. There's a reason why I'm not a USATF member. I would rather join USATF every year and be able to watch the US championships. It's not that complicated.
Okay. Remaining events at USA Indoors. Someone in our podcast Google Doc has put in my comments about Grant Holloway. And I didn't think this was a controversial take. I said, save his bet of the weekend. Grant Holloway to win the 60 hurdles. The 27-year-old, two-time defending world indoor champion, is the world record holder in a perfect 67-0 lifetime over the barriers indoors at the senior level. What's controversial about that? Does someone have to say something about that paragraph?
John, I put the headphones on the future 2044 Olympic champion, so I only can hear like what's leaking out. Cece, say hi. You're on live on the podcast.
Hi, Robert.
What about John?
Hi, John.
Hi, Cece.
When you run, Cece, what do you want to do? Do you want to run fast or slow?
Fast.
Okay. What do you know about running fast?
Picking up the pace.
Pick up the pace. Okay.
Good start.
Who do you think will win a race this weekend? Nikki? Shelby? Or Whitney?
Nikki.
Okay. There it is. It's settled. What about Nikki, Shelby, or Emily?
Emily.
Emily, okay. All right, go get some breakfast.
Is that nature or nurture, John? You raise a girl in San Francisco, of course she's going to pick Nikki to win the race. That's.
I knew that was going to be your first thought, Robert. I was like, how is he going to interpret this? Of course he's going to go to San Francisco, you know, liberal gay capital. But anyway... Well then, I was asking about Grant Holloway. You take issue with my Grant Holloway point?
Yes, we should have led the podcast with this. It's over. The streak is over. I read that and I'm like, this thing is jinxed. It's over. I apologize to Grant Holloway when the streak comes to an end. Like, I just feel like I read it. I'm like, this thing is jinxed. Hopefully this thing is streamed. If he loses a prelim, we're fine. That doesn't count as a loss, right?
Well... Yeah, but we need to reduce the win streak then, because the 67-0 includes all of his prelim wins. So I feel like if that happens, you have to say, okay, he's still undefeated in finals, but the number becomes less impressive.
It made me nervous from a jinx perspective, but I love it. This is one of the greatest streaks in track and field history. It needs to be promoted.
And the only other thing about this meet, focusing on my theme of this being... The women getting center billing, or should we say females, make everyone feel inclusive. Nia Akins, I think it's a big test for her. Like, is she taking a step in the right direction? Big changes for her. She's not been running that well. I think another poor performance doesn't mean the end of the world. She's got to get her stuff figured out. But if she steps up, wins this thing, we'll sort of forgotten the hiccup in the road she's had the last 6 months of the year. 6 months.
Yeah, that's the best case scenario. I'm pretty concerned about that, though, given that she didn't run great at Millrose. She ran too flat, but she got seventh. And then last week at BU, it was a 201 race, and she just stepped off the track with 150 to go. And I don't think that was about an injury. I mean, maybe it was, but she's entered at USA's. I think that was more just like, things aren't going well for her right now. It looked like she was giving up. So I guess I'd be interested to hear what the backstory was behind that. But I don't have a lot of confidence in her at this moment.
She was way off the pace or kind of with the leaders and just steps off?
She was in the process of getting dropped and stepped off.
Not a good sign. I'm surprised she's actually racing this weekend. But
all right, there's a big marathon on Sunday in Seville, Spain. 2021 Olympic 10,000 meter champion, Salomon Barrega. I believe he's 25, right? Youngster. Moving up to 26.2 distance. What do we expect? First of all, I'm extremely happy with this because one, it's early enough in the year that he can come back to the track if he wants to. If Grant Fisher wins gold, I don't want it to be, oh, there's no Caplimo, there's no Chip DeGuy, there's no Barrega. He beat a bunch of spares. So it's a good timing of the year to make your debut. Two, the weather in Spain is insane. When I make my much hyped sub-3-hour marathon, I'm sure the majors of the world will be contending to have me come in there and give them instant validity. But I need a fast course. Valencia, the city of running, is extremely fast. And Seville in recent years has been pretty damn fast. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, John. But like, I'm looking at the weather forecast. Like, why aren't we living in Spain right now? Seville, Spain, 69 to 51, 65 to 51, 67, 45. So every day for the next 10 days, it's going to be a high in the 60s and a low in the 40s, mid 40s. Well, I guess the low today is 51. So on Sunday, it's going to be, you know, 45 at 8:20 in the morning. Then it's going to be 55 at 11 o'clock in the morning. Sunny weather, pretty ideal for running a marathon, right?
Yeah. Spain's lovely. I mean, one reason we don't live there, I don't speak Spanish. I'm not sure about you, but I'm fully on board. If Robert Johnson, you actually start training for a sub three marathon, you make your attempt in Seville or Valencia, or you make a let's run event out of it, that would be fantastic. In terms of the race this weekend, Borrega obviously is the Olympic 10K champion. So, you know, pretty talented runner. I always think of him as more of like a, you know, yeah, a guy who can, he's a guy who can kick though. Like he runs world indoors in the 3K. He won that in 2022 in Belgrade. He was the bronze medalist last year behind Kerr and Neguse. Like, I don't think of him as an aerobic beast, though obviously he can run quite fast. He's run 12:43 and 26:34. So I'm not sure exactly how he'll train. He's just so like light on his feet. I don't know, view him as like a prototypical marathoner. I don't know if you kind of get what I'm saying there, but what do I think he'll run? Probably like 204 or something. I mean, he has run 57:50 in the half and 26:34. So even if you were sort of more of a light, shifty type of runner, I still think like baseline, you got to be able to run like 204 these days, maybe even faster. So I am intrigued to see what he does, but I don't think the marathon will be his best event. Which is pretty, I guess he's won the Olympics in the 10,000. So I don't think that's a controversial take.
I mean, he's a 3:32 1500 meter runner. I see your argument. You say he's got too much speed for the marathon. And when he ran that 57:50, he was only fourth in Valencia. Ran 58:57 this year there. Only sixth.
Right. I mean, I guess we should say last year at the Olympics, he was only seventh at the Olympics. He was only sixth in Valencia, 58:57 last year. So
but he did,
I mean,
run.
He probably was in better shape a few years ago.
I mean, last year he ran 26:33, 34 for third in the trials, and then seventh in the Olympics. Well, but by that logic, then Grant, you're saying Grant Fisher won't be a good marathoner. But look, if you look at the Valencia, I mean, excuse me, the Seville results. The last 4 years, it's been one, three of the last 4 years, it was one in 204 by all by Ethiopians. And these guys have never broken 207 in any other race. I mean, these are not guys that anyone's ever heard of, pretty much. Mekuant Ayinoe, 204.46, 2020. Asar Abdurrahman, 204.43, 2022. Gadise Shume, 204.59. Last year, Dureste Galete won it in 203.27, and then he backed it up by running 202 for second in Valencia. So I'm expecting a minimum of – you said 203, John?
I said 204. I mean, yeah. Last year was the first time ever the winning time was under 204 in Seville. So
I think 204, and then I think he's encouraging up that. He wins this in 204. He's going to get a large payday if he wants to run another marathon. And I do think we need to address the sort of the American privilege here of Grant Fisher. You know, I think the term white privilege is overrated. It's American privilege. Someone like Grant Fisher can make a ton of money in a base contract, even though he's not nearly as accomplished of a runner as Salomon Borrega, and doesn't need to move up to the marathon. Whereas Borrega, just the money sort of almost mandates that he run the marathon. If you're not winning on the track, you need to move up. So,
well, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I'm sure he probably could get paid a bit more running the marathon, but, and he does have a new contract, by the way. I don't know if you saw this. He's now with Li Ning, the Chinese brand. He's not with Nike anymore. So maybe part of that thing was, hey, move up to the marathon if we sign you and we'll pay you. I'm not sure. I need to talk to his agent or something, figure out exactly the thinking there. But Borrega is good enough that he could stay on the track and still make a decent living, especially by Ethiopian standards.
Who do you think makes more money, Grant Fisher or Salomon Borrega?
Grant Fisher. No doubt.
Okay. And who's an Olympic champion?
Salomon Barriga.
Okay, CeCe, Hobbs or Dylan? Who will win?
Hobbs.
Okay. Anything else, guys, before we wrap this thing up? I'll be at BU tonight for the Nordos 5K. I mean,
we need predictions. First of all, it's good that Narv Nordos, or I guess Jakob and his dad don't have a good relationship anymore, but it's good that Narv Nordos is running BU, because no doubt that Jakob's going to see the result. He's going to see the result of Cooper Kohlhacker anyways. And if he sees some crazy time, he's going to think that track is juiced. I'm going over there.
Although, and then he'll, this is it. My prediction can come through. True. He'll come over to BU in the middle of the summer and he'll run 12:29, and that'll be my bold prediction for 2025. Did you see that Nordos was entered under Melbourne Track Club? I need to figure out what's up with that, because, you know, he's been famously coached by Gert Ingebrigtsen. Does this mean they've parted ways? We could have an exclusive tonight.
That would be the perfect ending to the BU insanity and the chasing the times. If we got a world absolute 5,000 meter record indoors at Boston University in the summer. But what are we expecting here? People on the message board are debating Kohlhacker versus Cooper Tier with Nordos. Apparently Nordos said a few weeks ago he didn't think he was under sub 13 shape. I'm assuming they're going to make sure they get under 13. Is that the standard, John?
1301 is the standard.
But who do you expect to win?
I expect Hawker, just because I'm not convinced that Tia will drop him. But I will say this. Remember, they used to race all the time in college, and Cooper Tier actually had a pretty good record in these fast races, you know, in the 1500 against Kohlhacker. And this was the same year that Kohlhacker won the U.S. title, won the NCAA title, and was sixth at the Olympics. Cooper Tier could beat him occasionally in these quicker races. So, yeah, and we saw it last year at L.A. Cooper Tier ran 12:54, and Hawker ran 12:58. So if Tier's feeling good at the end of this thing, yeah, maybe he can put a little distance on him, but Kohlhacker just ran 7:23 in 3K. I think he's pretty darn fit, and I do think if he's there with a lap to go, he outkicks Tier. But I would have thought he would have outkicked Grant Fisher, and he didn't do that. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Hawker wins. We've also got a DMR. North Carolina is going to be running with presumably Parker Wolf and Ethan Strand. And I was thinking, did you guys read this article in Track and Field News that Paul Merger had about the Washington DMR that set the NCAA record? They ran 9:14, which is absurd. Like, I was looking at the splits. I'm like, I think it's going to be hard for any college team to actually surpass that, because it's not just the splits, which were really good. It was 250 for 1200, 46 high for 400. So maybe that can be improved slightly. 146 for 800 and 350 for the 1600, but they had two different teams of other Washington guys pacing them in that race. They had a C team that stepped off the track after the 1200 leg, and then they had a B team, was essentially rabbiting the A team for the first 3.5 legs before Nathan Green took over. So when are you going to get a set up again like that, where you have a team with the talent that Washington has in the middle distances, not only to run the time, but to sort of pace their A team in that sort of fashion? I don't know. I'm curious. But then maybe UNC shows up and runs 9:13 tonight and I look like an idiot. What do you guys make of that? Did you see the article, Robert?
Yes, I put it up on the homepage. I'm more on the message board thread. I think we could see a sub-9 DMR, professional, not college. But someone did the splits, and you know, I this would be great. You know, they used to have USA versus the world. Penn Relays is too windy, but I mean, I know they got rid of the DMR at World Relays, but why not have Nike versus Adidas at the World Relays? It would be amazing. But I was thinking Team Nike. Now, the question is, who do you run the 1200 meter split for Team Nike here? I'm putting Jakob on the anchor. Sorry, Cole. So then I would debate putting Cole Hawker on the 1200 leg.
I think he's a pretty good choice. Who would you, I mean, who would you put on that?
Now, is Wanyoni Adidas?
Yeah.
Oh, I need an 800 leg then.
All right. We can hypothesize about this next week when we don't have U.S. championships, but I think that's going to do it for.
Wait. I didn't get a prediction. I need a Cooper, Cole Hawker, Cooper tier prediction. For the record, the lifetime at 5,000 meters, according to Telstopcha, Hawker actually leads 4-3. He beat him twice in 2021. But
I want to know how this meet came about. We had a 5K last week in Boston. Another set of pros flying over. They charge a lot for these individuals to run. They just need to charge these pro groups. They're like, okay, you want to have another meet, another 5K? That's like $5,000. Just like, I mean, they would pay it. So,
well then, crazy. Wait until you find out about the Lost Chance meet next Sunday on BU. And we got another one with more sets of pros coming over to run. So,
Last Chance for what?
I think technically it's like a college Last Chance thing. It's not put on by the BU folks. I think there's an outside organization, but it's also just one more chance for pro groups to get in a fast run. I think some OSCs sending some people over, you know, there's going to be more pros running next weekend.
But in this LA meet last year, when Tier ran 1254 and Hawker ran 1258, is there any chance that Hawker ends up being the one? He's like, I'm fitter. I'll push the pace for us guys. We got to get the standard. And then Tier beats him because he sits on Hawker. I just imagine Hawker needs to do some of the work. If Hawker makes Tier do all the work and then outkicks him, and that's going to bother me. If it was Rabbit the whole way by a Kenyan, I would not rule out Tier beating him. I think Hawker's probably strong enough off that 722 now to beat Tier flat out in a 5,000 time trial. So I'm thinking Hawker wins at 1250. I'm going to say pretty fast. 1250, I mean, Tier's PR is 1254, so I think Hawker's better than that. 1253.
Okay. 1257. We'll see. The race is Friday night. Hopefully you've had a chance to listen before it starts with how long this thing's dragging out. But that is going to do it for the Friday 15. We'll have boots on the ground coverage from Staten Island this weekend. Regular show next week where we'll break down all the action from USA Indoors and from the BU Indoor Meet. And start getting ready. We've still got more championships to come. NCAA Indoors are in a few weeks, and then World Indoors after that as well. So still plenty of coverage to come on Let's Run.
We may do some shows from Staten Island. I mean, I guess John's trying to revive print journalism this weekend if these things are not broadcast. But we could just get rid of print journalism and just do a podcast. It's so much easier. You're done in like an hour instead of us writing articles for 4 hours.
Well, some of us like writing articles, Robert, crazy as that may sound. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.